Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. Before I go any further, I'm going to do a sound check. Michael, can you hear me okay?
You sound perfectly clear.
Oh, perfect. Wow, amazing. We're having weather and it took me forever to get through, so yay.
Oh, wow.
All right. So I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sri Devi, who is here to help us introduce Giving Tuesday for 2019. Welcome, Sri Devi.
Hi, Jen.
Hey. So do you want to start us off with giving a little intro on what Giving Tuesday is?
Yeah. So I'd heard about Giving Tuesday over the years, but in advance of the call, I did some extra research and actually learned some really amazing things about it. So it started back in 2012, so it's relatively new, actually.
Yeah.
And my understanding is it started as kind of a way to coming out of Thanksgiving and Black Friday and all of the focus on sales and Christmas and holidays and gifts to really kind of focus on a day that encourages people to do good. And really all of the different ways on this particular day we can think about putting our attention around what that looks like for each of us individually or as organizations or companies, et cetera. So everything from donating money, volunteering somewhere, providing a service. So there's so many different ways doing something good on Giving Tuesday can manifest.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And I just absolutely love it. And when I found out about it, I, of course, thought immediately of, oh, what a lovely way to support the Bridgewalk campaign, right? Because it falls right in the middle of the Bridgewalk campaign. And
mm-hmm.
it just is such an amazing thing to worldwide, because when I was looking into it, I mean, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of countries around the world that participate
mm-hmm.
in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, holding hands, not just with Sangha, you know, not just with our team over in Gantolombo, but really with the whole world and coming together on a day where we're all, you know, turning our attention to participation and how heart-opening participation can be for all of us. And so we were inspired to give folks a way to participate in that day by sending out, we just sent an email today that folks should have gotten that had sort of a little media piece. We called it a postcard, but, you know, it's just postcard kind of size when you look at it, that can be used to, you know, post on social media, that can be emailed, that sort of thing. So in case your friends and family don't already have something that they're supporting on Giving Tuesday, then this is a project that they could support. And so we were inspired to leverage it in that way.
Yeah, and I got the email and immediately went to the postcard, and it is beautiful. You have, of course, the beautiful faces of those three young women. And just such what I love about it is it's, the visuals are beautiful, but also the information is very clear and very succinct and very digestible, you know, in a time
yeah.
where so many have short attention spans.
Exactly.
You know, and it's so easy to share. You know, like you said, you
yeah.
can post it on Facebook. You can attach it in an email. You can post it to Instagram. You know, at whatever platform of choice, you can print it out and hand them out to people, put them in the mail, you know, anything that works for whatever your means of preferred means of communication is.
Exactly. And we will say that if you do want to put it up on, well, really, if you want to use it electronically at all, if you're going to email it out, if you're going to post it on a social media site, that kind of thing, that what we'd recommend is either going on the fundraising site and making your own fundraising page if you have a particular goal and you want to do that, and then link that, cut and paste that URL. So when you post the little image of the postcard on, say, Facebook, you put with it your link to your fundraising page URL. Or if you don't want to make your own fundraising page, that's fine too. You can just link to the URL of the campaign in general. And I won't read out that URL because it's going to be different whether you choose your own fundraising page or that sort of thing. I'm not a really high-tech person, so I'll just give you the down and dirty of what I do. I get to the web page that I want to send people to. I highlight what's in my, you know, the address of the web page I'm on. I hit copy, and then I just paste it wherever I want it to go. So that's the down and dirty way I know to do it for those of us who are not high-tech.
Yep.
So one of the things I wanted to look at, Sridevi, and I know you're in a really good position to kind of talk about this, is, you know, there'll be a lot of, because Giving Tuesday is so popular, getting more and more popular, which is fabulous. What, in your opinion, kind of what are the things that make this opportunity unique, giving to this project?
Oh, my gosh. All right. And we only have how many minutes?
I know.
Well, I will say that the first thing, one of the first things that I learned about the project and when I started learning about it is, I believe it was, or the one of the most direct experiences I first had was when Teresa came to the States and she did a couple of speaking engagements and she was talking about the roof and what happens when you don't have a good roof and how families had to stay up all night when it rains because they have to make sure that they have to protect themselves in case it was going to fall. And what was so powerful is I think it's very rare or not often that you get to meet somebody from a community or an organization that you want to support that is directly able to tell you what is going on in the community. Here's what I've experienced. I'm from there. This is what's going on. These are the things that we need support with. And I think that's probably the most special thing about this project is it's a one-on-one relationship we have with every single member of this community or of the Living Compassion community because we've met them, we visit them almost every single year. You know, we know their names, they know us. Everybody involved in the project is from the community who are in Cantaloupe. And I just, I think there's a way in which, I keep thinking the word special. I wish I could think another word, but it's truly a special, special group of people. And we get to have a direct experience of that. And I think that's really rare. There's so many oftentimes, you know, administrators and websites and you know, people are thousands of miles away and you never really know where the money is going and how it's really being used. And there is complete and utter transparency with this project, with what we're doing and what they're doing. That's, I think, really powerful.
Really powerful. And, you know, there's so much, I'm not really in the official kind of development world, but you hear so much about scaling, you know, making projects big, which is great, you know. I mean, it's great to get clean water to a lot of people and great to get healthcare to a lot of people. But there are some things you can't, quote, scale. And I think that's what you're pointing at, that this project really offers that. It's incredibly unique to find people running the project who live there. I mean, we've seen, I don't even know, dozens and dozens and dozens of projects in Zambia over the years of us traveling there. I've never once met one that had a coordinator who actually grew up in the community where that project was happening. And that's what Teresa will tell you. That's why projects fail, is that people don't.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you might also be Zambian, but that's completely different than having grown up in the community. And I just want to say one other thing about what you just said to tell people that you and I and Teresa spent an hour on the phone this morning.
Yes, we did.
Walking through every single girl in that girls program, what grade she's in, because their school year ends in December. So they'll be finished. So January is a big time for us, big transition, girl, you know, the end of the year exams are happening. The really big standardized exams for some of the girls are happening in certain grade levels. We went through every single girl to look at, okay, now what's going on with her? Okay, what's next for her? Okay, what do we need? Okay, we need to line up that. Okay, and that is so rare.
Yeah. I mean, just exactly what you said, Jen. Like, if this was the type of program that was in 50 different cities and 30 different countries, et cetera, like, we could not have this kind of conversation that we were able to have today. The richness of the conversation, the level of course, Teresa knowing every single thing and being really such a key pivotal person in that community. She knows the girls. She knows their history. I mean, she knows the 1,000 children, you know? I mean, just someone with that level of knowledge. And I think the other really critical thing about scalability, in my experiences, you know, it ends up becoming kind of a cookie cutter. And the thing is, and this has been my experience, every person, every individual, every community is unique. And so the work is really making sure, and what I feel so proud about is every time we go there, our job is to listen, you know, to listen to what they're saying and hear what they're saying that they need or where they want to focus and assist them within that process. But it's really putting in the time to be there and listen to them, not what I project some organizations, and as we know, have gone in of like, you need bathrooms and we're just going to build a bathroom like this. But they never talk to the community about what that needs to look like and what makes sense culturally and what's appropriate. And that's what I think is so beautiful about this project is everything is done in step with them. You know, there isn't anything that we decide or they decide to do that's not in conversation and agreement with each other.
Yes, yeah, which is really high touch, right? I mean, as you say, you can't scale that. You just can't scale it. And we wouldn't want to, right? Because that's what's so valuable to us. That's the paying attention part of the program. So that's how it fits so beautifully with practice. Is that, you know, you don't scale awareness. You just, it's such a deep opportunity for each of us to be in that process of love. It's extraordinary, really.
Yeah, and I think that level of attention, again, just exactly what you're saying, which is such obviously a foundation of our practice, the foundation of our practice, that awareness and that attention, is so important because what it allows is these girls are individuals. You know, they're in a program, yes, but they each have an individual personality. They have different things, and we get to learn all of that. You know, they don't get grouped and clumped and categorized and sorted, you know, in a way. They're all have their own voice, their own story that we get to learn because we have that relationship and are able to build that over the years with them and therefore are able to know how best to work with Teresa and the Living Compassion group to support them and where they want to move and how to progress in that way.
Yeah, so good. And as you say, I can't believe it, but our minutes have wound down. I was going to say they're winding down, but they have actually wound down.
Wow.
I think we mentioned it in the media piece we sent out, but one of the things I also love is, you know, climate is a huge deal right now. I mean, it's the Earth needs our help or needs the lack of our help. I'm not sure however you want to say that. But, you know, we need to, as, you know, that's a big place that needs a lot of assistance. And I love it that there's that synchronicity of educating girls and women is one of the best things you can do for the planet. And so, you know, that's just such a lovely synchronicity in terms of putting it out to family and friends that this is a way not only to participate in an extraordinary program, but also to really, you know, care for the planet. So it's just a win-win-win all the way around.
Yeah.
So, Tridevi, anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
No, I just, you know, however anyone can participate, highly encourage it. You know, it is the best thing I think I've ever had the privilege to participate in my entire life. Along with our sangha and our practice.
Me too. And, you know, I'll tell you, as you were talking, I've watched myself go, I want to give all my money to that project. I mean, really, it's so fun to talk about it, you know, to just really get it, how extraordinary it is and how lucky we are. So thank you for being with us this afternoon to do that.
Oh, thank you so much, Jen.
All right. Take good care, Tridevi. Good night.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Ashwini. Jen, can I mention one other point that was inspiring to me about the Africa Project?
Absolutely.
Okay. I was thinking as you and Tridevi were talking about the longevity of the project. I mean, how many years it's been going, the continuity of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I met Teresa in person here in the U.S., what, 10 years ago or more? I mean,
yes, Michael, it is 10 years ago. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Wow.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. I can remember it like it was yesterday, sitting in the Zen Center in the South Bay doing open air with Teresa. I remember it distinctly where you and Teresa were talking. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so fun.
So I don't know what's the word for that, but there's a continuity, there's a depth to that relationship, there's a learning that has happened, a deep relationship. Yeah.
That's also, I will tell you, that's also very rare. You know, when we travel there and we're on airplanes and we're in various places, you know, you see other people like doing projects like this. And there's kind of a, well, but people will say things like, oh, yeah, great. I mean, how long have you been there? And when we say, you know, 15 years, there's this reaction. Oh. Kind of a,
oh,
that's real. You know, that's not just like, oh, I have a good idea. Let me go and pose my good idea and find out it doesn't work and leave. That's real.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks. Have a great show.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Exciting topic, huh?
Absolutely. And the parallel to practice is just so perfect that one has to mention it, I think, right? That I think I remember an exchange that Sherry had with somebody where someone asked her, how long do I have to be in relationship with a mentor or something like that? It's like, you're in love with this person. Why wouldn't you be in relationship with them forever? And that the relationship would deepen, right?
Yes.
And so I think that's what you were touching on in terms of the longevity of the project. This is not something that is separate from us. It's part of us. We love these people. We love this community. And we're in relationship with them. And so when time, whether it's hard or difficult or as we are all evolving, we evolve together. There's no question about commitment.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just like bringing, you know, all of life into practice. And that notion about scale, Michael, you know, it's so interesting that our job is to be particular in our attention.
Yes.
Because that is a mode of love. And life scales in a way that we can't scale because we're not all of life. And so that approach to the project where we show up and we pay attention, and the way the project scales is exactly what this campaign is about, right? These little little trees are becoming a forest that when we pay attention, then life scales it. We have kids going to English school. We've got, you know, the way the project has grown is aligned to its nature, right? And it's growing. There's no scaling as something separate and outside of our ability to pay attention and be aware and be present to, as Sridevi said, what the needs are on the ground.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's a deep relationship, a knowing people individually and what the needs are. Yeah, exactly as you said. And I have announcements here, if we're ready for that now.
Yes, wonderful.
Okay. Join us this Saturday, November 30th, for an exploration of how we're bamboozled into living life on ego's schedule and how to support the human being in dancing to life's rhythms. The Compassionate Scheduling Workshop is the latest bridge walk practice opportunity to benefit Living Compassion Africa. Proceeds go to the 2019 Bridgewalk campaign. Celebrate.
I think registration for that closes on Wednesday, Michael.
Okay, good to know. So registration for the scheduling workshop closes tomorrow, Wednesday. And celebrate 2019 and welcome 2020. With a community of folks dedicated to practicing conscious, compassionate awareness at our New Year's retreat, December 27th through January 1st, in the San Francisco Bay Area. This retreat will look at bypassing ego identification to practice authentic communication and includes group discussions, guidance with Sherry, and free time to spend in nature on the beautiful, spacious grounds. And if you have a favorite quote from Sherry's responses in the current email class, we would like to invite you to share it with Sangha. Please direct the quote to peacequotes@livingcompassion.org so it can be sent out to Sangha through the Daily Peace Quotes program. For these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, you can press star 6 and then 1 to make guest show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic in about 5 minutes is great. Okay, Ashwini, I think we're ready here. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini and Michael, it's Jan in the Bay Area.
Hey, Jan.
Hi. I had to call in because I'm feeling withdrawals from not having center open for a week. I'm one of those, just to clarify, you know, I live in the Bay Area, so I'm lucky enough to have center close enough to go on a weekly basis, and it's amazing. So,
but the thing I want to—it's truly amazing. I just want to underline that, right, Dan, that there is a way in which when the kinds of conversations we have in person and the things that we look at, and it's just wonderful to be in that space and in those conversations and in looking and then doing it with Sangha. There's just something so magical about it.
Yeah, truly. And the depths of it. I mean, I feel like I just get so much from every person, new or old timer or whatever. It doesn't matter. I always get to see a lot. The main thing I want, and the other thing I wanted to touch on really was just huge gratitude for this last assignment in the email class on
class
communication.
Class 8?
Uh-huh. Yeah, class 8. Sherry mentioned this morning on the morning radio show about being drawn, you know, tears actually coming up from, you know, seeing the beautiful offering for the postcard and all for the campaign. And that was, and my response was the same for this last assignment. I mean, it actually brought me to tears because what I realized is that that assignment was giving me permission. It was helping me bypass conditioning, and is another way to say it, having permission to experiment in ways that conditioning says just are not okay in efforts of communication, in being clear. And it's a beautiful assignment.
Yes. And I don't know how many people who are on the show are part of the email class, so the assignment was simply that we were looking at the giving and receiving of information and how conditioning interferes with that. And the last assignment was about looking to see what kind of information you cannot give. And there was such a level of discernment in the responses about how what ego's honesty is not what we want to communicate, and that oftentimes what we need to do is get really clear for ourselves. And that clarity happens with the recorder. So the assignment for the next week is to basically watch our process and how ego and the ego process that attempts to interfere with the communication while we're interacting with folks, and then get to a recorder and become really, really clear so we know what an authentic communication looks like in that interaction. And there was a really important line to that, because authentic communication is being honest about your process, not echoing ego sentiments. And that was such good guidance.
Oh, so helpful. And I think the other part of it that struck me in reading the assignment, thank you for going, you know, explaining what what the assignment is so everybody's aware, but just how the description of how ego might come in and take over and what we can say in those situations to whoever we're communicating with. And, I mean, just the examples that were given, I don't know, it just really touched me. And because it's what I said before. It helped me step over, bypass, whatever the term to use, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, to try different ways of communicating. Yeah. And if it isn't clear, if the other person has a certain kind of reaction, then I have the option of coming back later, of saying that, doing the recording like you said, and getting it clear, however long it takes.
Yeah, what I was saying when you said that, right, Jan, is we are so used to being controlled by conditioned mind that when we're offered a different way of doing it, and not just a process way of doing it, but examples that feel so kind, so compassionate, that the invitation is busting. This is the only way you can do it. It has to be right, and you've got just one shot. If it goes wrong, then you just got to retire and feel bad about it and either never communicate again or just resign yourself that you're going to feel forever separate in all your communications because you're not good at it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that freedom to go, you know what, I could experiment, I could get clear, I could bypass conditioned mind. Wow. What a gift.
I know, truly. Because I have been, throughout the class, I have been experimenting with family members, and it doesn't always go really well. And what conditioning does, of course, is to come in and say, well, there's no way, you know, they don't understand, you know, whoever's giving the guidance, they don't understand, whatever it says, or you don't know how, and you might as well just give up, that whole sentiment. Okay. Yeah, it's just, it's very clear, and the examples are so terrifically helpful.
Well, and anyway. You know, Jan, just to complete that thought, that what it says is they don't understand, or you might as well give up, or I'm not sure what you said, but both of those are clues to, here's what I could get from my recording session. I get to be understood by somebody. And so actually listening to what the voice is saying to me gives me a lot of clues in terms of what I can get clear on without the other person. And once I'm not looking to the communication with that other person to get something or for it to go somewhere, then it frees us up in an exchange of information that's more like processing, right? Here's what I got to say, here's what you've got to say, and here's what I've got to say, and you've got to say. We may not get to any level of clarity, but at least we are in an engagement of connecting towards clarity rather than in a process of separation. And you're right, it doesn't matter if the other person gets it or not. You've at least been true to yourself and stayed connected to you, which is really the most important thing.
Yes. Yeah, and the example is also what I appreciate. It's, you know, how we can communicate. I mean, if we're looking at our own process, how to communicate that to someone else. I'm not clear right now.
Yeah.
I need a little bit of time so I can get, let me get back to you about it. And anyway.
Such a level of presence.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
so
I
just
wanted
to express
it. In the morning. Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. No, I just
Oh, just that we were looking at that in the morning show, that the process I'm in right now is the process I want to be looking at or talking from, right? Because that gives us what's going on now.
Right. The two are just so complementing each other. I mean, meaning the year-long and the email class. It's busting through a lot of stuff.
It is. And you're right. We just are grateful for it.
Yeah. So thank you so much. I'll let somebody else.
Thanks, Jan.
Thanks for joining us, Jan. Ashwini, what dropped in for me during that conversation is two things. First of all, the just really practical examples. It makes it very tangible about communication and ways we can do it that's more compassionate. And the other thing is that I had some suffering conversation about a particular communication going on, and in the moment I asked about it with the other person, and the whole suffering just went poof. It just disappeared, collapsed. There was clarity, and it's just so great to see that how quickly I can cut through that suffering.
Yes, 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 by being present. By instead of being talked to be able to see what it's doing and be present to it. And there's a certain level of not being vulnerable. The twist in the vulnerability that everyone was talking about is that we don't want to be vulnerable to ego, so we never do what ego tells us not to do. We always do what ego tells us to do. But when we are vulnerable to life, there's a way in which we're with life that is so freeing. And I think that's what you're pointing to.
Yes.
What's going on?
Yes.
I've nothing going on about it, but this is what's going on. And we actually, in being authentic, we can elicit someone else's authenticity. It's not guaranteed that it'll go that way, but at least one of us is in an authentic place.
Right. Yes. Wonderful. And we have another caller here. Next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. It's Karen.
Hey, Karen.
Hey. Let's see. I actually had something I wanted to look at tonight, so I had an insight, and that was so I wanted to, but I'm not sure about it. And also, and it's around fear, because I'm kind of working on that right now in my life. And I especially have fear around transportation, which I know sounds strange, but like if I know people are traveling, I get worried about them, you know, like with this big storm and, you know, all that kind of thing. So I realized in looking at all that, I thought, okay, I became very clear that ego was feeding all the the stories, you know, terrible things that could happen, all of that. That I thought, oh, okay, this is totally ego. I could see that. And I thought, well, you know, decisions about decisions that, you know, like, are you going to come or are you not going to come or, you know, that kind of thing because of the road conditions. Decisions that are made from ego really aren't decisions. They're just ego expressing, I guess I'd say. So that was part of the insight.
Let me see if I'm tracking, Karen, that you're looking at the process of fear. It's fear around transportation. And what you're noticing about that is it's just the voices talking to you about all kinds of scenarios that people could get into. And so then coming from that place of identification with what the voices are saying, there's the solving for it, right? Are you going to come? Are you not going to come? And there's so much anxiety in the conversation around making a decision to mitigate the fear and to keep everybody safe. Your insight is just because you decide from that place, it's really not a decision because it's coming from within the system.
Yeah, that was the first part of it. And plus, it's not even my decision to make. I mean, so that's part of it, too. There's, you know, like ego can't be in control of it because I'm not the one traveling. So there's that piece of it. But ego can control me enough, if I let it, to act out, to say things, to advise, to, you know, to make people paranoid enough that they won't come. You know, the ego could do that. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, no, and it's something that we've also been looking at in the email class, right, Karen, that it talks us into a place from which we are its mouthpiece, and it's doing, and its entire purpose is to make its agenda work out, right? You attend to it, you propagate it, right? And so that whole notion that we look at around being a social relief, where, there is a way that intelligence registers concern about snowstorms and slick weather and accidents that could happen because people are unconscious and don't pay attention. But there's a way in which I can work with my anxiety on the recorder and then be as present as I can possibly be when looking at with my loved ones whatever they need to be looking at in order to make the decision that's most compassionate for all. And if we are coming from that ego place, there's no ability for light to drop in what might be appropriate in the moment. There's nobody there listening to the light clue.
Yeah.
We're all up in our heads having an anxiety fest and missing out on what that still small voice can give you such a clear indication of, actually, you know what, this isn't a go. Or I won't know that till I know it. So what's the point in having a conversation about it till that clarity arises?
Yeah, yes. I mean, yes to all of that. It just seems so much kinder. I think that was the second part of the insight was that, and I don't know quite how to say this, but maybe true decisions or actual decisions or real decisions, those are made from intelligence. And when it dropped in and the way it dropped in was just very calming, just like, okay,
uh-huh.
Yes. And even though it still doesn't, I've watched myself get hooked because other people that know nothing about what I'm going through that have nothing to do with my family have been texting me about road conditions and this is closed and that's closed and what's going on. And I just finally realized, oh my gosh, all this, like, this really, like, these texts are scaring me, and I don't know, so I kind of got cut hooked back in. But I want to stay with that, with the original insight, because that, to me, was the place that could end suffering around this. And anyway.
Well, it's so important what you're pointing out, right, Karen, that to me, several things. First of all, it's that classic thing we talk about in the fear book, right? When people say, well, don't you need to be afraid in order not to get hit by a car when you cross the street? Well, actually, fear makes you less present. But intelligence can completely register if there's danger. And what moves us is awareness and attention and presence and intelligence. It's not the ego process that decides, because it's not intelligent, right? It's referencing something that is not true in the moment. So there's a quality that you're pointing to of when we know the decision is coming from life, there's a certain calm certainty almost, right? And there's a qualitative difference between making the decision out of fear and making the decision within quotes out of life. And the beautiful thing about life decisions are they're just right in the moment, right? The next moment, everything could change and something else arises, but that doesn't matter. You know that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's a flexibility in life decisions, and it may not work out. I mean, if you're going on a trip and you choose not to get on the plane, you may not be able to go on the trip if you choose not to get on the plane, even though it suddenly becomes sunny and it's no longer snowing, right?
Yeah.
But then you're with that, right?
Yeah.
So to know that qualitative difference between where I am, and the relief comes from not being the conversation anymore. I'm not going to indulge the conversation. And you watch how after that calm certainty happens, everybody else's conversation start to attempt to hook you back into the anxiety, and the only thing to do there is to notice it and say no, not going there.
Yeah.
Not indulging that conversation.
Yeah. Yes, and then there's also one last piece of it, not the insight, but just the piece of I don't have any control in this. You know, right. I mean, I don't, because it's not me. And it's so clear that it's not, I'm not the one that's going to be making any decisions about any of this. And I guess I need to do some recordings around that too, because of course I'm not in control, and of course we're never in control, but boy, there's something really wanting to be in control. And and I know that's just ego too. So a lot to work with.
And may I say something about that, Karen, just quickly? Because I think you're saying something that is the root of fear, right? Because if we face life squarely, what we can see is see it for what it is. Be present to what it is, which is constant change and not knowing. Constant change and not knowing. And for something that is separate, so if we're with that, that's what we know. And the intensity of that truth is what produces that ego reaction of fear and wanting to be in control, right? Because that process can't exist in not knowing and presence. And so to recognize that desire to control and fear are the process of separation that's not with light, and to just recognize, you know, I might know that snowstorms cause accidents. I might tell you not to come, or I might go have a conversation about whether somebody should come or not. But ultimately, as you said, I don't have any control over what happens. You may choose not to come, and you could walk out on the street, get hit by a bus.
Yeah.
There's a level of not being in control that is just something that is not in our awareness, and we only realize it when something untoward happens that is totally unexpected.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yes. Well, it feels right now like a very rich kind of in-the-moment place to be practicing. For me,
yeah,
you know, it's just like it's funny going along, and then all of a sudden, you know, and I was even thinking, I'm not having any fear, and then all of a sudden, there was a change, and then all of a sudden, oh, okay, here it is, I get to see it all in action, in the moment, and work with it, and I'm still working with it, so I'm just thinking. Recordings, and listening to this, you know, this again, this processing of it, and lots of breathing, and saying no to the conversations. I've been doing that a lot today, the ones in my head. Yeah, so.
Yeah. And thank God for the practitioner, right? Because that is it's seen as an opportunity for practice.
Yeah.
And there's curiosity to see what the process is like, and there's the willingness to use the tools in order to be able to document this real opportunity to get past something that is a major place of suffering for you. And there it is. I'm going to grab onto it and wallow in the richness.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Karen.
Yeah. Thank you too, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Karen. And Ashwini, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beauty?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Ashwini, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi. Boy, that last conversation in particular was helpful. I have been looking at a process where that takes me into dark despair. And it can have, there can be different content, but it kind of goes to everything's hopeless, nothing matters, why bother, that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I learned in the email class that's now going on that the dark mood and the despair that's a characteristic of an Enneatype 4 process.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, there are a couple of things that I'm seeing about. First, I'm wondering if when I'm identified with it, it is so real. You know how that is. And so then where it will take me is, well, if I could only find a way to understand why the world is the way it is. I mean, it's just, you know, keeps me spinning around in that. So anyway, what you just said when you were talking to the previous caller, that constant changing and not knowing, that really feels like something I want to practice with.
Mm-hmm.
And acceptance of that, because it feels like the being pulled into the identification is trying to avoid accepting I have no control and I don't know anything about what's going to happen.
Wow, that's a brilliant process, Catherine, because first of all, it takes a level of willingness to be able to watch the process. And you've seen it. I mean, we've had this conversation a couple of times, right? That there's a way in which you get pulled into that place of darkness, and you can see how clearly you're talked into that place, right? You can actually watch mm-hmm. yourself being talked into that place. And that from that place, it really looks difficult and hard and gloomy, and anything else is not available. And that is an identification. When we're out of it, we can see it clearly. And you can also see how it maintains that identification by attempting to focus the attention on understanding the world the way the world is and coming up with a framework or a model that will assist you to put it all in a neat package, get a grip on it or get a framework together, and then you'll be fine.
Exactly.
And what you've seen is that entire cycle just maintains the identification. And what you're really seeing is, you know, so we have a conversation with someone like Karen in the last conversation, and you can see that part of what that system orchestrates is you can know something, you do have control, knowledge will make a difference, and the world has to be a certain way, and it isn't, and therefore your experience of that has to be X. What it robs you completely of is the ability to be here to see the world for what it is, right? Mm-hmm. To face the world as it is and have an experience of it which is immediate and get to know it as it is rather than an idea of how it should be with a comparison of how it's not that and therefore you have to have this stock experience of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And what, okay, so knowing the world as it is is going to be, okay, here's what's dropping in about that. Seeing the world as it is would be what is in front of me. So it's going to start with what is in front of me, not any kind of I need to get a worldview that's more positive. Brilliant. Again, wonderful, right? Because the way of framing that also points to what ego wants the world to be. This is how it needs to be. This is the way the world needs to be. And you know what, Catherine? If it isn't, you can't stand it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It can't be within quotes negative, because you're not going to be able to stand it, and you've got to go back into a cave of horror and despair, right? A dark
mm-hmm.
place.
Right.
But it's so good to see that when you're with the world as it is, you're looking at what's in front of you. And if what's in front of you is a flower and it's your entire field of awareness, that's what you're present to. Now, if you're in front of something, let's just say something horrific or something sad, then you're with that too. In other
mm-hmm.
words, there's no the suffering happens because there's an idea that horror doesn't exist in the world.
Mm-hmm. And shouldn't. Yeah.
And so then I get to be with the sensations of intelligence registering whatever it is that's in front of me. And I get, you know, I practice the ability to hold all of life, not just
mm-hmm.
select aspects of it as
mm-hmm.
what life is.
Mm-hmm. 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 And so I can have the experience.
Go ahead, sorry. Well, I have the experience of what that is, right? I mean, if I feel horror, that's being alive, because I get to have that experience and look at that experience and be with that experience and see what I see from that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps
yeah.
choose not to be that, right?
Yes. Hmm.
Or choose to be what might be able to bring an unconditional love to something that doesn't have that. Because everybody
yeah.
is trying to push it away, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, wow.
And let's not lose what you just said. It doesn't have to be a positive one. You just have to be present to how it is. And
mm-hmm.
how it is does not have positive and negative on it, right? Life just simply is what it is. So
mm-hmm.
you see a flower, and the flower is just the flower. You see someone cut the tree down, and there is the tree being cut down. Everything that we register on top of that, about whether that's right or wrong or should happen or shouldn't happen, is in the conversation. And so if I'm referencing the conversation, then, you know, who are these sort of people who would cut down a tree, right? That's where I go. Rather than being with the deep level of caring for life that is experiencing the sadness of something beautiful being destroyed without having
mm-hmm.
any opinions about it, right, or judgment about it. It's just pure love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Right. Very good. Because in the experience of being, you know, in the identification, there's this, if you, this is something that you can't be acceptable. It's not acceptable. It can't be accepted, and you can't deal with it.
Mm,
and
yeah.
none of that is true. What a response can be when there's I'm witnessing someone else's pain or suffering, or, you know, the tree is cut down, whatever it is, the sadness, the pain around that the response, if the response is unconditional love, then it's all embraced. I mean, that is really, unconditional love is like the ultimate acceptance.
Yes,
I don't have to go to a worldview that understands why this is happening.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. In fact, that's a distraction, because it's such a head question, right?
Yeah.
The fact is, going back to our previous conversation, life is mysterious.
it's not meant to be understood. We just have a notion that it should go the way we think it needs to go and that we can understand it. If I'm able to be with the facticity of, I don't know. I can never know life in that way. I have no idea why this is happening or how it unfolds or why X happens. Then I can just be, I can accept my not knowing and accept my experience of what it is I know in this moment. I have these sensations. It feels, this is the conversation. Here's what I'm believing. Here's where my suffering is, right? And so that level of being with is what we refer to as unconditional love and acceptance. I'm not saying there's anything wrong here. I'm not coming from that ego place. I'm just here with how it is, having the experience that I'm having. And as you said, it doesn't have to be a positive one, within quotes, positive according to conditioned mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and being with myself as I have that experience.
And being with yourself as
love.
You have. Yes. Well, and I don't, I mean, we say this and everybody rolls their eyes, right? Because in that moment where you're projecting that the tree is suffering, the person who's really suffering is you. You're the one in pain. You have no idea what the tree is going through, right? And so the ability to be with that experience that you're going through is really true acceptance because it's happening in you.
Yeah,
which is such a different experience than being in that dark, despairing space where I can't do anything. Well, the only thing you can do, actually, is to be with the experience that's happening in you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is so helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. And there's so many layers on top of that, but, you know, just the movement that you're just describing is so the first step. Because it doesn't preclude us from acting in the world in a way that is in congruence with what we believe or, you know, none of those things. Or participating in the world to make it a different place or any of those things, right? But the first step is really recognizing I don't have to go with ego on this. I can go with love on this. And let me get really, really clear about that for myself so that where I come from doesn't perpetuate the same process that the horror is coming from or the judgment of the horror is coming from.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Catherine. Take care. Right. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. And actually, we have time for at least one more caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini. Hello, Michael. This is Jeff in Iowa City.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi. Well, my heart's kind of pounding a little bit because I want to talk a little about something that's kind of been coming up, I think, through the communication email class and just looking at some different things in my life as I've gotten a little deeper into practice. So here's the deal. So 30 years ago, I basically cut off communication with my family of origin because of horrific things that you're just talking about, horrific with the previous caller, but some really, you know, horrible things and so I just could not be around them. And then, so I haven't communicated with them during that time. It was, they kind of, when I brought some things up to discuss, they just kind of circled their right wagons and said, no, that's not the way it is. And so we basically parted ways. Well, now, just a few years ago, my mother passed, and she was really the fulcrum of the abuse and the horror in the family. And so my father is still alive now, and he's 80, or in his 80s. And I have siblings that I haven't really talked to either. And I'm having kind of a impulse to contact them because, you know, I'm not the same person as I was 30 years ago, and they're not the same people. And if it's a comfort at all to my father to have a reconciliation, then that would be great. I'm really not wanting, having a big need fulfilled for this, but more of a sense of just opportunity to kind of reconcile. And whenever I have kind of done this before, kind of thought about it, conditioning the voices just go crazy of, you know, how can you think about that after what they did to you, yada, 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 and they're going to be mad that you, you know, didn't go to your mother's funeral, and yada, yada, and then you're just going to stir up a hornet's nest. Why don't you just keep it the way it's been for the last 30 years? So I'm having some struggles in how to approach this, and wanted to get some of your thoughts and guidance on the situation.
Yeah. Well, it's such an interesting place, right, Jeff? Because the thing that dropped in for me is it's a workshop, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a complete workshop in getting really clear about what you want and why you're doing this and why you choose to do this and how and that sort of entire process, because there is no right answer.
Right.
I mean, everything that something arises as an impulse, and then we look at that and go, where is that arising from? It doesn't necessarily mean that I have to act on the impulse just because it's a possibility. What my opportunity is to get really, really clear about what is that, and that perhaps would be the first place I would kind of point to have a conversation with a mentor about. It's like really talk to the person for whom that seems to be a possibility. What are they afraid of? What do they hope for? What is it that they're looking for? To get a lot of clarity around that for Jeff.
That's just very good idea to start with that clarity, because I have like an impulse, but I don't necessarily want to act on it if it's going to kick up more problems than it's worth, or
right. So the impulse arises, and then conditioning takes a hold of it, right, and spins the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you did it and it happened this way, will you be able to stand it? Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
And so you shouldn't do it because you won't be able to stand what I'm going to do to you if you reach out and you get rejected or whatever, right? Because at some level, what we're practicing with is, no matter what happens, there's a way in which conscious, compassionate awareness is on my side. I have a relationship with it, and I'm going to be able to be with anything that happens. Right? That's my that's the workshop aspect of this whole thing. What you do or don't choose to do, or what happens to you because the circumstances are in life, that what in everything what we're training to be present to it, right? And be present to it with compassion, with love, with unconditional acceptance. That's my practice. And so whether you choose to or you don't choose to reopen this relationship, whatever happens, you'll do it as a workshop, you'll pay attention, you'll see whatever you see about it, and then you'll be able to be with Jeff through every step of the process. So that's an approach that you can take to whatever whether it's finding a job or relocating to a different new city or connecting with somebody you haven't talked to in years, the process is the same, and you have great training in doing that. But before we do that workshop, there's another workshop we can have, which is really, really sitting with and exploring what is driving it. Is it a setup that ego is putting in place for you to suffer more? Is it something that life feels is time? And if life feels it's time, it's going to give you a lot of information about how to do it, when to do it, why to do it, right?
But we can
be in communication with that intelligence and be present to more fully than just an impulse.
Yes. Yeah, I like so well how you have kind of framed that, and, you know, because sometimes it feels like a setup for more suffering, and other times it feels like that it's a legitimate good thing, and other times it's like, practice saying, well, you should do this because if you're very spiritual, this is what you do.
Well, I hope you know that's not practice, right? That's the Zen voice that says human beings have to be this way, and it's setting you up as a contest, right? That's the voice that says you're an alcoholic and you'll get a job as the bartender, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
set like me up and
that.
Saying you should be Gandhi, and who said that? I'm not, I'm just a guy here, you know.
Right. If we read anything about Gandhi, you can know how troubled he was, right?
Yeah.
In terms of all of the decisions and the process that he went through, it's called My Experiments with Truth for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're doing, My Experiments with Truth. What is true here?
Yeah.
And, you know, Jeff, in the final analysis, if we live in a non-separate world, reconciliation can happen without even talking to another person, because the reconciliation happens in you. You resolve what needs to be healed, right? What needs to be forgiven, what was unacceptable that was held in a lack of acceptance in your experience.
Because
it doesn't happen with the outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because all of those people and all of those experiences are being held. I think Sherry said something this morning about things being stuck, right? So that whole internal exploration allows you to come to peace with whatever went on and to bring into acceptance what was unacceptable. And that as that happens, you may or may not choose to do that with someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's right. Whether you choose to do it with somebody else or not, because you can do it internally, and it doesn't necessarily have to be with somebody else.
Yeah.
But just let intelligence.
And nothing is excluded, right? There's no urgency. There, conditioning will say, okay, he's 80 years old, and so you've got to reach out right now. And what happens if you lose this opportunity to make amends or whatever else? And the answer to that is, you're not in relationship with him. I am. So let me look at what I need to get clear about before I go out and do that. And so if something happens and I'm not allowed to do what it says I'm supposed to do, I will learn to be with that in absolute unconditional love and acceptance.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you very much. I made the right decision to get in the queue tonight.
Thank you, Jeff. Keep us posted, okay?
Yeah. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff. And Ashwini, that brings us just about to 6 o'clock.
Wow. Time flies
when
we're having fun.
Time flies when you're having fun. So I want to thank you and all of our callers and all of our listeners, and happy Thanksgiving, and go happy.
Thank you, Michael. Happy Thanksgiving.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.